Hardy's Sunday to preach, and he is had a heart procedure done this week, and he called me a couple of days ago, asked me if I would fill in for him. So we're going to keep going through the book of Ruth. I assume John's at home. I think he came home a couple of days ago, and I'm not sure what they did to his heart. Somebody may can fill us in, but my understanding was some of the heart medicine he was on, he can only take for so many years, and he'd been taking it considerably longer than that, and they had to do something else to keep his heart in rhythm, I think, is the deal. So, but from what I understand, he's home and doing okay. We're in the book of Ruth, chapter 2. Going to be looking at the first 10 verses of chapter 2, and we will not dare read past that unless I get in trouble again. You know, sometimes I wonder, especially as we go through some of the narratives, and I heard, actually it was my dad, heard him say this years ago. I don't know why I've always remembered it, but talking about is, you know, when we preach and when we go through a text and we talk about what the author is saying, he made the comment one time, he said, sometimes I wonder if the Apostle Paul, if he could hear all the sermons, explanations of things he may have said in one particular verse, if he would have said to himself, gosh, did I really say all that? As if we may get more out of it than was intended. I'm not sure about that. But what I wonder sometimes is that we talk about characters that are in the Scriptures. We talk about Peter, and we talk about Paul and John, and here we're talking about Ruth and Naomi, and we'll be talking about Boaz. And we try to imagine, and we suppose a little bit about their personality, a little bit about their character, and we do so just on very little amount of information sometimes. You know, we've painted over the years a picture of Peter as being sort of a hothead, impulsive type guy, just from a few things that you see in the Scriptures about Peter. We tend to paint Naomi as a woe is me type person from the book of Ruth. And sometimes I wonder if, I guess sometimes I kind of hope that they cannot hear what I'm saying about them. Because I, you know, you may be totally off base. Ruth chapter 2. Let's kind of review where we're at. Ruth, or Naomi, and her husband. What was her husband's name? Elimelech. Elimelech and Naomi. They had two sons. What were their names? Chilion and Mahlon, or something like that. Okay, they lived in Israel. In fact, they lived near Bethlehem, it seems. And there was a famine in the land of Judah at the time. And it became severe enough that Elimelech, out of, we assume, desperation and just trying to stay alive, trying to feed his family, picks up, takes his wife and his two sons, and they leave Judah, they leave Bethlehem, and go east. They crossed the Jordan River into the country of Moab. The Moabites were a people who were back and forth friends, sometimes enemies with the Israelites. But they were a totally different culture, totally different religion. And it wasn't always an acceptable thing to be affiliated with the Moabites. But Elimelech and took his family, and that's where they moved. They get there, and at some point after they're there, at least 10 years, perhaps more than longer than 10 years, but at some point Elimelech dies. His two sons, at some point, we assume after he is dead, marries two Moabitess women, Ruth being one and Orpah being the other. And then those two sons of Naomi dies. Mahlon and Chilion both die, and so Naomi is left with her two daughter-in-laws, Ruth and Orpah. And she gets word and hears that the famine is over in Israel, and so she decides to go back there. And so she takes her and her daughter-in-laws, and they head back. She convinces, or tries to convince, her daughter-in-laws to not go with her, to stay in your own country, here are your own people, you have relatives here, I want you to stay here and find another husband, and you know, you kind of go your way and I'll go mine. They were on good terms with one another, it sure seems like, but she just thought it would be better for them if they didn't go with her, and she would just go on back to her people, and they would stay where they were at, and everybody just kind of start over. Orpah follows her advice and stays, but Ruth will not. Ruth has her mind made up, and we read the verses that are common, familiar verses in the Christian church in chapter 1 there, where Ruth tells her, don't ask me to go back, don't ask me to leave you. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. Where you die, that's where I will die and be buried. And we're familiar with that, those passages. She gets back to Israel, and the women folk of the village that were, apparently she went back to where she was from, and they have not seen Naomi apparently in 10 or 12 years, and they said, is this Naomi? Here comes Naomi. And she says, you remember the line, don't call me Naomi anymore. When I left here, I was full, I've come back empty. Just call me Mara, or bitter. And they come back, and the scripture says at the last verse of chapter 1, at the beginning of barley harvest. And we're going to pick up there in chapter 2. But before we read our text from chapter 2, you see on your outline, I've got three paragraphs that come from the Westminster Confession of Faith. And if you were in our small group a month or two ago when we did The Invisible Hand, the study of God's providence, you will have read these before in that study. Now, this is pretty heady stuff, and we're not going to digest these statements. But I want to tell you that these statements are not just thrown together. There are not redundant phrases. There are not useless words. It is something that 300 or 400 years ago was carefully thought out. And it will do you well to spend enough time at some point to digest what these statements are saying. But let's read the first one. God, the great creator of all things, doth uphold, direct, dispose, and govern all creatures, actions, and things, from the greatest even to the least, by his most wise and holy providence, according to his infallible foreknowledge and the free and immutable counsel of his own will, to the praise of the glory of his wisdom, power, justice, goodness, and mercy. Second one, God from all eternity did, by the most wise and holy counsel of his own will, freely and unchangeably ordain whatsoever comes to pass, yet so, as thereby neither is God the author of sin, nor is violence offered to the will of the creatures, nor is the liberty or contingency of second causes taken away, but rather established. And then the third one. Although in relation to the foreknowledge and decree of God, the first cause, all things come to pass immutably and infallibly, yet, by the same providence, He ordereth them to fall out according to the nature of second causes, either necessarily, freely, or contingently. Now, if I might be so crass or so bold, I want to summarize what you just read in order for our purposes today in two statements, and you'll see those are the next two statements. The first one is this: in His providence, God orders all that comes to pass. In His providence, God orders all that comes to pass. And the second statement is this: that in His providence, God, for the most part, orders it according to nature. God orders all that comes to pass, but usually He does it in a very natural way. And we're going to talk about kind of both sides of that issue this morning as we go through our text. But keep that in mind as we read the first 10 verses of Ruth chapter 2. Verse 1, "Now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, 'Please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor.' And she said to her, 'Go, my daughter.'" Now let's stop there just for a minute and catch up on what's going on. You remember Ruth and Naomi have just come back from Moab. They got there at about the time of the barley harvest. Now you need to remember that in Jewish law, that when a farmer reaped his harvest, when he collected his grain, they didn't do so like my mother would sweep her floor. They did it sort of sloppy. And they left the part that they dropped and the things that they left and the corners of the field and the last pieces of grain that were on a stalk, they would leave there, intentionally leave there for the poor. And the poor were allowed to come and gather the remnants of the grain that was in the harvest. This was their welfare system. Now, just chase the rabbit just for a second. Notice they didn't pick the grain for them. They had to do a little bit of work to get it. But it was there. Here is Ruth and Naomi. They're both widows. I assume they have nothing. They've been gone for 10 or 12 years. I doubt if she still had some land in Judah. Perhaps she did, but they are on the verge of being destitute, more than likely. And Ruth comes to Naomi and says, "Let me go to the field and glean after the reapers." So this is what's going on. She's coming in behind the reapers, gathering the bits that were pieces that were left for the poor. So there's where Ruth is at. Verse 3. "So she departed and went and gleaned in the fields after the reapers. And she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech." So it just so happened. It wasn't that this was planned. They make a point to tell us that just by chance, which is nothing, we know, but just we would use those terms, just happened to the field she came to, unknown to her, belonged to Boaz. Verse 4, "Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, 'May the Lord be with you.' And they said to him, 'May the Lord bless you.' Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, 'Whose young woman is this?' And the servant in charge of the reapers answered and said, 'She is the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab.' And she said to us," or Ruth had said to them, "'Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves.' Thus she came and has remained from morning till now. She has been sitting in the house for a little while." Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay here with my maids. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw. Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, Why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner? And we'll stop at that point. I want to point out four things from these 10 verses, from our story so far, about God's providence. The first one is this, that in His providence, God at times touches your life in unchangeable ways. God touches your life in unchangeable ways. He does not ask your permission. He does not give you a choice or allow your input. He orders it to come to pass. Say that all again. At times, God, in His providence, touches your life in unchangeable ways. He does not ask your permission. He does not give you a choice or allow you input. He just orders it to come to pass. I want you to think, I have listed here several unchangeables about your life. The first one is your parents. God didn't ask you who you would like your parents to be, did He? Now, I understand that parents can die and other people can be guardians of children and perhaps raise us as our parents, but as far as biological parents, you cannot change that. By the time you realize what a parent is, you've got some. Right? It is unchangeable. Another thing that is unchangeable is your gender. You can't change whether you are male or female. Now, I realize there are plenty of perverts out there that are trying to do so. And among other things that we might call them, perhaps the kindest is a fool. You didn't ask for it, you didn't have any input. God made you unchangeably male or female. Your time in history. When you were born. You might wish you had been born in the revolutionary times in our country, but you weren't. You might have longed to have been lived through the good old days. My dad always said he didn't remember any good old days. But you weren't. You were born at the time you were born. There's nothing you can do about it. You can't change it. You can't change your nationality. You are an American. I know you could renounce it and go somewhere else, but the time you were born, this is what you were. You can't change your race. Whatever your race is, you can't change that. You can't change your physical features. Some of us are short. Some of us are tall. Some of us have big nose, some of us have little nose. You can't change that. I mean, obviously you can to some extent, but that's the way God made you. What are some things about you, and we don't have to answer this question, that you would change? You know, almost everybody. In fact, this question was asked of Miss America beauty contestants. And almost all of them, there is something about their appearance that they would change. Either their nose is too pointed, their ears are too big, their ears are too small, their hair is too straight, their hair is too curly. Everyone seems like there is something about them that if they could change it, they would. What is it about our story at so far in chapter 1, in the story in the life of Ruth and Naomi, in God's providence, He allowed some things to happen that neither Ruth nor Naomi can do anything about. Can you think of any? Famine. Death. Okay? Take the famine. A famine came to Israel. it touched Naomi's life. She didn't ask for it, and she could do absolutely nothing to stop it. It was an unchangeable touch on her life from the providence of God. Mike says, death. Could Naomi have, or Ruth, either one, have done anything to prevent the death of their husbands? Don't think so. At least we hope they weren't involved in their death. That would change the story, wouldn't it? Okay, but surely we would assume that Naomi and Ruth did not want their husbands to die, but they did. They died. In God's providence, God allowed it to happen. They could not change it. There's nothing they could do about it. Then we get to chapter 2. The first verse, there is something and an unchangeable thing in God's providence that has happened. And that is that Naomi, her late husband Elimelech, has a kinsman named Boaz. Naomi may not have thought much about Boaz, but he's there. He's in her family. He's a wealthy man. He's an influential man. And we'll see as we go through the book, he's a man of integrity. Naomi has nothing to do with that. She didn't cause him to be that way. He's that way. And God has placed him there in her life. I want to make a statement at the end of every one of these points that is a way that we can apply this to our life. For this first one, the statement is this. It is an offense to God. It offends God to be ungrateful to Him for the unchangeable things in your life. If you go through your life with an ungrateful spirit because of the way God made you, that's offensive to God. Point number two, take advantage of God's providence. Take advantage of God's providence. Work long and hard. Take advantage of God's providence. Work long and hard. We see here in the beginning in verse 2 that Ruth takes the initiative. Ruth goes to Naomi and says, listen, why don't I go and glean in the field behind the reapers? Ruth took the initiative. The opportunity was there for her to do something, for her to help support herself, and she took the initiative in taking advantage of the providence that God had left her with. Ruth took advantage, the second one, of the opportunity to glean behind the reapers. It's not just that the opportunity is there. She takes advantage of it. She sees the opportunity. She sees in God's providence, He has opened an opportunity for her, and she takes advantage of it. Third one, Ruth took advantage of the daylight. You know, in the story here, I have always, it seems, depending on which version you read, but it seems like to me that when Boaz comes and he's talking to his reaper and he asks, you know, he sees Ruth and he says, who is this? Whose young woman is this? And it seems like to me, and maybe this is just an assumption I've had for a long time, that I would assume that Boaz came in the evening, after the day's work was done, and he comes to where they all gather and is checking with his reapers, the guys in charge, and seeing how the day went. And he notices Ruth, and he says, who is this? And either way that you want to look at it, the idea is pretty much the same, though. The man says, that's Ruth, that's the Moabite woman that came back from Moab with Naomi. What does he say? She's been in the field from morning till now. Or she just now came in. She's been working all day long, perhaps to rest just for a little, depending on how your version may read. But she's worked all day long. She's just now come in. Do you get the idea that this reaper is impressed? That's the idea I get. That's the thing he mentions to Boaz, isn't it? That's the Moabitess woman. I tell you what, she's worked her tail off. She's worked all day. She's just now come in. Ruth took advantage not just of God's providence, the opportunity that's available. She took advantage of it, daylight to dark. She took advantage of it for that day. Ruth took advantage of her youth. Some of you have as many gray hairs as I've got. Some of you have more. I'll tell you what I've found, that I don't feel like working as much as I used to feel like working. I just don't. You know, used to, and I'll tell you where I noticed this. Used to, when I would work all day, and I always had one or two projects going around my house. You know, building our house while we lived in it. You know, that's how carpenters do things. And I would work all day and then come home and work at my house. Either work on our house or cut firewood or work in the garden or do this or that. But I can remember thinking on the way home, here's what I'm going to do when I get home. And when I was 30 years old, by the time I got home, I had rested up a little bit just from driving home. You know, I have found myself for the last 10 years still thinking like that. But when I get home, I don't get going. When I get home, I don't have the energy to keep going that I did when I was young. Take advantage. And I'll talk to you young, the kids and the younger people here. Take advantage of your youth. To take advantage of the opportunities God has given you to work long and hard. You won't always be that young and that strong. Here is my statement at the end of number two. The person who will not take advantage of the opportunities God providentially puts before him will often find that God, in His providence, will allow their storehouses to be stripped bare. Listen to that again. The person who will not take advantage of the opportunities God providentially puts before him will often find that God, in God's providence, in His own providence, will allow your storehouses to be stripped bare. If I were to think hard enough, I could make a list of a number of people I have known, could write their names down, who started out probably, perhaps with an inheritance, who started out with something that had been providentially provided for them. Opportunities that had providentially been provided, and yet they were squandered away because of not taking advantage of opportunities. Squandered away. Number three, cultivate. Now, let me, before I tell you what this one is, let's look at verse 5 where Boaz comes and he says, "Whose young woman is this?" Why does Boaz ask that question? What do you think it is about Ruth that he has noticed her and asked the question? Somebody give me an answer. She's attractive. You think she's beautiful? Nice looking? A stranger? Somebody he didn't know? Okay, it looks like he knew knew everybody, or you assume he knew the people there. His reapers were there. His own maidens that worked with the reapers were there. You would think he would know a lot of those. But here's somebody he doesn't know. Okay, Sean? Okay, something about her that perhaps didn't look like a Israelite, maybe. Dina? Alone? Okay, didn't seem to be, know the people around her. Okay. Okay. All right, I think all those things are come to play in there. There's one thing that I want to suppose that it may have been. This is just a guess. You can take it or leave it. But I think that there is something about Ruth that attracted his attention. I mean, she may have been a beautiful woman. I don't know. But to have worked in the field all day, I doubt she had on her high-heel shoes. She probably didn't have her fingernails painted. She probably didn't have her makeup on, right? She probably was there working. But yet there's something about her. Perhaps it was just these things, obvious things of being a stranger and all this type of stuff. But I think that it's likely and possible that there's something else about her. And part of that deal of what you just said, Brian, of being standing out by being the last person in, the one that appeared to be not just sloughing off, has something to do with it. But I think it's, and this was my point here, is to cultivate a beautiful countenance. It is of great value. And I see this in the rest of the story about Ruth. You can see it in Ruth in her interaction with Naomi before they come back from Moab. You can see it in later on in her interaction with Boaz. There is something about Ruth and about her countenance that is attractive, I think. You know, I know people that way. I used to go to church with a man that he and I would have differed on a lot of things. We differed on theology, for one thing. But there was something about that man that I liked to see him coming. He was always happy. He was always smiling. He was always what I call chipper. And when I was around him, I felt lighter. My shoulders straightened. I felt encouraged. He didn't weigh me down. You know, I'm married. A woman like that. I've heard people say, to me, or to my wife, that you just light up a room. I remember probably 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago. We got to church one morning. An older lady, I could carry you to the exact spot that she stood, that I stood, and that Susan stood. And we walked in, and Susan said hi to her. And she said, you know, I can just see Jesus all over your face. You don't know how many times Susan and I walked into her grandparents' house. And I can just see, still see the change that would come over their face when they saw her. You know, when we were first married, I could tell both sets of her grandparents. She was the favorite. When we first got married, they would make a half-hearted attempt to hide that from the other grandkids. The older they got, the less they cared about hiding it. Before we got married, my dad told me when he found out we were going to get married, he said, I don't think you can find a better girl to marry. I don't know if you've noticed or not, but I'm not that way. I think I'm smiling and I'm not smiling. I feel a smile inside, but somehow it doesn't make it to my face. Remember when I was about 16, we had a family portrait made. Of course, when I was 16, I had a sort of attitude anyway. But I remember when we went back to pick up the pictures. I don't know why I was with my parents when we went back to pick them up, but I was. And the photographer, he said, I'll tell you, he ruined these pictures. And I remember getting them made, and they said smile, and I remember smiling. But I looked as mad as you could possibly look in those pictures. I remember going to Hardee's one day when Hardee's was in Heber a few years ago and they were still open as Hardee's. I was at work when he was at lunch and I was going by there to get me a chicken sandwich, breaded chicken sandwich, ketchup only. Order fries and large Dr. Pepper. I was having a good day. I remember I was happy in the Lord. Okay? I was having a good day. Things were going well. I was enjoying myself. I was in line, fixed to eat a nice chicken sandwich. One girl in front of me in line. She gets through and moves out of the way, and I step up to the counter, and the loudmouth woman that was taking my order, she said, smile, it won't break your face. I mean, I got in a foul mood just like that. I hadn't wanted that chicken sandwich to bed, I'd have walked out. Did God make us that different? To some extent. She may not have to work at having a beautiful countenance as much as I do. But that doesn't mean I can just look at you and say, hey, get over it. You know, you just, that's the way I am. I don't have to be that way. I don't have to stay that way. I don't have to expect you and anybody else just to like it and to enjoy it. I don't think that I think I can actually smile pretty big. I'll try it. Get in front of the mirror when I get home, try it and see. But I think here's what we see in Ruth. I think Ruth, there's something about Ruth and about her countenance. Yes, she's a stranger. And yes, she might be a nice-looking girl, but there is something about her that makes her attractive. Here is the statement. Let a grateful spirit. I think that's what Ruth has had. A grateful spirit. Her husband, yes, her husband is dead. Yes, she is living in poverty. But she has made a decision with Naomi, that I'm going back with you. Your people are going to be my people. They may treat me like dirt. They may look upon me as if I'm a dog because I'm a Moabitess. But they'll be my people. Your God will be my God. And she's working hard. She's taking advantage of what God has providentially provided for her. And there's something extremely attractive about that type of person. Let a grateful spirit reach your face. God, in His providence, will honor and reward it. And we will see as we go on through the book of Ruth how God indeed does honor and reward Ruth's spirit. Number four, have a healthy understanding of your rights. See that humility is a virtue, not a weakness. We see in verse 10, notice what Ruth has said. She's been out working, she's come back. Boaz has come to her and says, listen, don't go to any other fields, stay here in my fields, I'll see that you can get enough grain. Notice again, he doesn't say, I'm going to have my reapers fill your basket for you. He's just going to make the opportunity easy for her. If you want a drink, take a drink of our water. What does Ruth do? Says she bows before on the ground before him and says, why have I found favor? What is there about me that I have found favor in your sight? Ruth doesn't look at this as gleaning behind the reapers as a right that she has. She sees it for what it is. She sees it as grace. She sees it as an act of mercy that Boaz is interacting with her around. She doesn't demand something. She says, what have I done that you would look up on me in this way? See that humility is a virtue, not a weakness. I heard years ago someone say, humility is not thinking less of yourself. It is not thinking of yourself at all. I like that statement. Humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's not putting yourself down. It's not having, you know, all bad-mouthing yourself. Humility is just not thinking of yourself. It's thinking of others. And the statement there that we'll end with is this. Humble yourself before God, and He, in His providence, will exalt you in due time. We're going to see that in the life of Ruth, aren't we? Here is a humble woman that is there in the field gleaning, and in God's own time, in God's providence, she will be exalted to a place that four chapters about her in this book. Let's pray. Father, as we go through our life, God, I pray that you would help us to recognize your providence. God, yes, to work, yes, to be diligent, yes, to take advantage of opportunities, to be responsible with our own lives, our own behavior, but at the same time, acknowledge that you, in your providence, have paved the way for us. God, help us. God, that we might live grateful lives. God, with a spirit of humility, Lord, we might walk before you. Lord, for your honor, we pray. Amen.